According to our next guest, there's something un-American and illogical about a market system where the price of a product bears no relation to the cost of its inputs. Yet, he says, we have lived with such a scheme in the dairy industry for decades. Retail milk prices have stayed the same while milk prices paid to farmers have plummeted. In his new book, Milk Money, Dartmouth's Kirk Kardashian asked whether it's right that family farmers in America should toil so hard, produce a food so wholesome and so popular, and still lose money. He looks to uncover the hidden forces behind dairy farm consolidation and explains why milk, a staple commodity subject to both government oversight and industry collusion, has proven so tricky to stabilize. Meanwhile, every year we continue to lose scores of small dairy farms. Kirk Kardashian is a senior writer at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth and the author of Milk Money, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Joe. Great to be here.
What brought you to the subject of milk?
Good question. Dairy farming didn't mean a whole lot to me until we started taking our daughter to daycare on a dairy farm in 2007. I met these hardworking, honest dairy farmers, and I was really impressed by them. I respected them a lot. And then 2 years later, the dairy crisis hit. Milk prices plummeted. Costs went up. Hundreds of dairy farms around the country were going out of business. And I'd get to the farm in the morning after dropping my daughter off, and I'd see these hardworking people, and I'd say, you know, it's not right that they're providing this product that we all want, and they're losing money in the process. So that gave me sort of my personal connection to the dairy industry.
Was there ever a golden age in the sense of, did we ever have the formula right?
Well, you know, that's a good question, too. Dairy farming has changed a lot since it first started in this country. Back in the when we first settled this country, there weren't dairy farms per se. There were just farms, and people were subsistence farming. They were doing all sorts of things, providing milk to their family was one of them. But they didn't really sell it on the market because there wasn't a way to get it out very far in short enough amount of time. When the railroads came in and connected farms to bigger markets, that allowed farmers to get more sophisticated and number of farms to increase. And I'd say if there was ever a golden age, it was probably before the dairy farms were regulated by the federal government, before there was a price that was sort of set by the USDA. I'm not sure. I mean, I think dairy farmers have always worked hard and never, you know, gotten rich off of it. But I think in recent decades, it's gotten just a lot worse just because the system hasn't responded to changes in the modern economy.
When you look at what we think of as far as government intervention, when did that start to take shape?
Well, that took shape in response to the Great Depression. There were wild swings in milk supply, milk price. The country was very poor, and we needed sort of a stable milk market. And Henry Wallace, who was the Secretary of Agriculture at the time, instituted the Agricultural Adjustment Act that basically set the price for milk based on supply and demand in different regions around the country. There were 34 regions to start with, and that's been whittled down to about 10 since then. So from the beginning, the federal regulation of milk, the price hasn't really been connected to the cost of production. It's always been a question of the supply and demand in the particular area that's being regulated.
You talk about this in the book, and Senator Sanders talks about this in his introduction as well, about the issue of milk overproduction. And what part does that play in this overall problem where you have too many cows and too much milk?
Yeah, I think it plays a big role in our problem. you know, we've gotten really good at making milk. We've become much more efficient. We've been able to design cows to produce, you know, 80 pounds of milk a day, 100 pounds of milk a day, when they used to, I mean, produce just a small fraction of that. And we've done that through lots of different technology and things. But what we've also not been able to do, really, is understand when there's too much milk on the market, and to have farmers sort of agree to put out less. You know, farmers do belong to cooperatives, and in that sense they are organized, but they don't really follow what each other are doing as far as how much milk they're making, and they don't say amongst themselves, we're making too much milk right now, the price is falling, we should make less. So they just keep on making more. If the price goes down, they still try to make more because they're trying to bring more money into their farm from the volume instead of the milk price. So it's sort of a vicious cycle. Milk price goes down, they make more milk, puts more milk out into the market, price goes down even further. So there's sort of a disconnect there. And that's because there's not really a regulation on how much milk farmers can make. That's sort of the one of the big things that there's no control of.
Is it possible to develop a system of supply management in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I think it is possible. And I think a lot of farmers are hoping for that. And there is a supply management provision in the Dairy Security Act, which is part of the new farm bill that has not been passed yet. But the Senate did pass a version of it in June. The House Agriculture Committee passed a version in over the summer. But as you probably know, the House couldn't agree on a couple different other provisions having to do with food stamps and other budgetary items. So they let the farm bill expire, and that Dairy Security Act, it's not taken effect, and we've got we're sort of in limbo right now. But there is a way to deal with it, and this supply, there is a supply control provision in the new farm bill if they can pass it.
It's such a complex thing when you look at this, because you bring up so many points in the book. Okay, on one hand, you have this issue of what can we do to make this system better, but then also, let's look, these are all the great things that are happening on the farm. This is these are the issues, and this is what we're trying to change. And yet we also look at the negative aspects of farming, whether it be water pollution or air pollution or industrial agriculture or even milk that isn't as healthy as it once was. This is a huge balancing act.
Yeah, it is a huge balancing act. And, you know, the public has said, we want cheap food. And that's great. You know, I mean, the less we spend on food, the more we can spend on fun stuff and things like healthcare, perhaps, or technology, education, things like that.
Right. The fun stuff.
when you sort of put this mandate out saying we want cheap food, that says to farmers, okay, well, I better cut costs however I can and still produce this product. When farmers have really thin margins, they're going to cut corners. They're going to forego those drainage swales that will prevent their manure from running off into lakes and streams. They're going to try to hire the cheapest possible labor they can find and not give them good benefits. They're going to run their cows ragged and sort of push them as hard as they can to get as much milk as they can out of them in a short period of time, and then sell them for slaughter. So they're going to do all these things that that we're sort of forcing them into because we're not paying them a fair price for the milk, and yet we don't realize these externalities all the time because they're not impacting us personally, but they're still happening out there. There's huge air quality issues in the California Central Valley, and the dairy farming industry is partly to blame for that. There's huge water pollution issues in Lake Champlain, even from runoff from dairy farms. There's lots of issues that people aren't necessarily aware of, but cheap food is one of the causes.
The name of the book is Milk Money, Cash, Cows, and the Death of the American Dairy Farm. And Kirk Kardashian is our guest this morning. You talk in the book about this American dairy industry, $150 billion per year business. And as you say, there are two numbers that come out of this. One is milk price and the other one is supply. And as you note, they are very closely related, but treated incredibly differently.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the milk price is highly regulated, and there's subsidies, there's incentives, there's controls. Milk supply is basically a free for all, and we've sort of rewarded big ag for coming up with technological solutions with things like quote unquote sexed semen, so you're guaranteed to have a milk producing cow every time instead of a 50-50 shot between a cow and a bull. We've sort of said, if you can through technology give us more milk with less inputs, we will reward you. And the system has been really good at that. I mean, farmers are extremely expert at making their cows as comfortable as they can be, so they produce more milk. At designing nutritional programs to squeeze so the cows make more milk. And designing these high-tech rotary milking parlors where, these cows are in this giant sort of lazy Susan that goes around and around, and the milkers can put the vacuum pumps on them and milk, 1,000 cows in 5 hours, which is incredible. So we've been very good at making a lot of milk with less inputs.
So how does that benefit the average farmer? Doing that and getting all of this milk that you're still getting a crummy price for, then what's the benefit to that?
Well, the benefit is when your margins are really thin, if you can produce more and achieve an economy of scale, then you can reduce your costs and reduce your overhead and sort of receive more of your milk check instead of putting it out towards labor costs, towards other costs on your farm.
But you are still putting out more of a product than the market needs.
Exactly. Yeah, which is sort of the irony.
And if nobody's buying it, then what? Then you're just kind of screwing yourself, aren't you?
Well, I mean, in a sense, I wouldn't necessarily use those words, but I think
eloquence.
No, I mean, maybe if I were talking, informally to my buddy.
Yeah, but I know.
I think.
Well, you're my buddy.
I think what my point is that farmers are just like the rest of us. They have to make money today. They can't really think about the market, 4 months from now, a year from now. They've got bills to pay right now, so they're going to make as much milk as they can today and get that milk check. So they don't always do things that are in the entire dairy farm industry's best interest. They're doing what's in their own best interest at the present moment.
Absolutely, and it's what they have to do.
We're all guilty of that, Yeah.
Well, but it's sort of a culture that perpetuates that, right? I mean, it's what of what's expected from them by the market and the industry.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it is. That's right.
So how do you change it? I mean, not only the individual system, but the overall culture of it, because this is something that has ultimately been going on for decades as a problem.
Yeah, and I think how do you change it is the big question. I think we would all love to have a world where we know that our milk came from small grass-fed farm cows, small farms that sort of rotationally graze their cows and your idyllic dairy farm. I'm not sure we can go back to that at a scale that will feed our country. But what I think we can do is enforce certain regulations to that will take away the competitive advantage of these mega farms. If farms were forced to pay for the cost of the pollution that they put out, their business model would change drastically. If they had to pay their workers a fair wage, livable wage with benefits and all the things that regular people expect, their business model would change. So I think partially it's de-incentivizing the mega farm model, and I think partially also it's reforming the milk pricing system so that a fair price, you know, can be achieved for all farmers regardless of their size.
When it comes to the family farm that we see in rural New York and New England, of how hard these people work, it's stunning. It's absolutely incredible. And you don't know, I mean, I live around it as you do, and it never fails to boggle my mind of how hard these people work and how little they get as a result of that labor.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, a lot of people ask, well, why do you do it?
Right.
And you know, and I in my research for this book, I talked to this this agricultural behavior health specialist named Mike Roseman, who's out in Iowa, and he has this great theory that I really like. It's called the agrarian imperative. And what he argues is that there's genetic and anthropological evidence that humans are endowed with an instinct for farming as a survival mechanism. We have this instinct to acquire land, market, cultivate it, you know, for food, for fiber, for what we need. And so there's this really strong sort of instinct that we have, and especially when it's been passed along generations, you know, for 5-6 generations. And that at the same time that we have this instinct, farmers also have these personality traits. They have, you know, a huge capacity for hard work and perseverance. They have confidence in making their own decisions. They have the capacity for coping with adversity. They're really comfortable with solitude and self-reliance. They're risk takers. So, you know, between the sort of genetic pull to do this and also just the sort of general characteristics that farmers share, you know, you end up with farmers who are willing to work so hard and not make a lot of money. But it also militates against them when things get bad, because farmers are also really optimistic. So, you know, they think, oh, well, things will get better next month or in the next couple of months, so I'm just going to work harder. Maybe I'll take out another loan just to keep the, you know, the bills paid just for the next couple of months. And when things don't get better, they're deeper in a hole.
Those farmers remain optimistic. The subtitle of your book is Cash Cows and the Death of the American Dairy Farm. So I ask you where your optimism in all this lies.
Well, my optimism lies in our, you know, our hardworking some of our hardworking congressmen. I say some because I know that not all of them are actually doing something to help the situation. But
right.
There are delegations from numerous rural states where the congressmen, the senators, and representatives are working hard to get the Farm Bill passed, to get the Dairy Security Act implemented. I think that can do a lot. I'm also hopeful in models like Hudson Valley Fresh, which I write about in the book. It's a Hudson Valley, New York-based cooperative that has been able to produce a really high-quality product. They make milk and yogurt and sour cream, and it's really good. I mean, you can taste the difference.
Okay.
And they're bottling it under their own brand, and they're selling it in the store under Hudson Valley Fresh brand, and they're charging a little bit more than conventional milk, you know, sort of more than generic milk, but less than organic milk. So it's right in between, and people are paying more for this high quality product. So I think if you can scale that model up in different parts of the country, you're really going to give farmers a chance to make a livable wage.
And I guess that also depends on, I mean, there's a lot at stake here, and one of the fascinating aspects you talk about, if we're at a point now where this is part of our national conversation of where our food comes from and the local movement and so forth, and you have to wonder, well, if not now, when? It just seems that the time is very right to start talking about this, and we'll continue talking about it and changing it.
Yeah, you know, I think there is sort of a movement afoot among the public. It's hot now to know where your food comes from,
right?
To know how it was produced. People are asking that at the restaurant. They say, "Oh, where is this beef from? That in this hamburger?" You know, Is this local produce? Things like that. So that when people start asking those questions, it means that they're actually keyed in on an important consideration about their food, and that's how is it actually brought to their table. And when we start asking those questions, then we can sort of dig a little deeper and understand the consequences of our purchasing decisions. So if we know that we can support a different model through our purchases, then we go out and look for those other models.
Kirk Kardashian's new book is Milk Money, Cash, Cows, and the Death of the American Dairy Farm. The foreword is written by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. The book is published by the University of New Hampshire Press. Kirk Kardashian, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks so much, Joe. It was fun.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, the name of the book is Milk Money. It's published by New Hampshire Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.